time for the Rider Dynasty podcast. Let's go. Welcome to the Rider Dynasty Podcast with Ryan Bickerstaff, JJ Wenner, and your host, Michael Kloss.
And welcome to the Rider Dynasty Podcast again. We're looking at week two, a game week. We have a lot to cover from week one. And then, of course, we've got to look ahead to week two here. Joining me tonight is Ryan Bickerstaff. Ryan, how are you feeling after a tumultuous week one?
Michael, I'm feeling like I'm never doubting Dak Prescott ever again.
Maybe with that Kellen Moore offense that you can tell us about a little bit later. They look good. JJ Wenner, it is so great to have you back. We missed you last week. How did week one turn out for your squads?
You know, my dynasty squads did pretty well. My son delivered a swift butt whooping in a redraft league. But worse, I discovered that I joined a standard keeper league. Horrid.
That hurts.
Yeah. But I'm doing well, and I missed you guys. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, I know, especially for you, because you love all the points, all the decimals, everything that you could possibly imagine. So I can just see you trying to sit there and look at, oh, a 7-yard run. Oh, no points for you.
Stop rubbing it in.
Okay. And certified athletic trainer Nick Mirabito is going to help set your lineups with the latest injury news. And boy, do we have a lot to cover in week one. Nick, I'm really interested to hear what you're going to have to say about some really big name players on the pod today.
Yeah, Michael, unfortunately, some big name guys went down this week. But yes, I'm here, ready to go. Made it back from the Eagles game. My voice is starting to get back to normal. I apologize if there's going to be any voice cracks tonight that make me sound like a prepubescent boy. But I will do my best for you guys.
All right, that's all we can ask. You can apologize as much as you want here. We're still going to make fun of you. That's just kind of the way it goes.
That is fair enough.
That is true.
we definitely look forward to all the content that you're going to bring. It's going to be a lot, as we mentioned. We're going to get up into Nicked Up to hit the injuries, and we're also going to give you just a couple of our best and worst fantasy calls from the past weekend.
Yeah, then we're going to play a little game we call Red Light, Green Light. Please, just like it sounds, we'll give you a few situations from week one and tell you if we think if it will continue or if it will change in the future.
And of course, we hit a pretty high percentage of our start since week one, so we'll look to continue this trend for this upcoming weekend.
That's right. Remember, you can always hit us up at Twitter, at Rider Dynasty, or at our website, RiderDynasty.com. But first, it's time for
Nicked Up
with athletic trainer Nick Mirabito.
All right, Nick, you're on, buddy. Couple of collarbone injuries in week one. We know Nick Foles is out indefinitely with a broken collarbone. Won't touch on him too much because he's, again, on the IR for a while. Probably the biggest fantasy impact, if I may say so, last week was Tyreek Hill. Even made a hospital visit that sounded pretty serious. I'm going to let you get into this because I would really love to hear the breakdown of what he's going through. And then if you could maybe tell us what you think when fantasy owners can expect to get him back in their lineup.
Yeah, just really quickly on Foles. Just obviously super unfortunate. By all accounts, he's like an awesome human being, near and dear to my heart. He's going to be missing a lot of time here. Probably going to be hitting the IR with that injury there. But Tyreek Hill's injury was much different than Nick Foles, even though it was a collarbone. What happened to Hill was he suffered a sternoclavicular or SC joint dislocation. And if you go ahead and kind of feel on yourself, you should be able to feel kind of where your clavicle or collarbone kind of meets your sternum, the large bone we have in the middle of our chest there. So in Tyreek's case, his collarbone dislocated and actually moved backward at that SC joint, which is considered a medical emergency because of what sits behind that area, right? So there's arteries, there's veins, your lungs are back there. So that is why he was sent to the hospital.
I am not a fan of that. It just dislocated, though. It didn't break, right?
That's correct, yeah. So, okay. You know, it is a scary injury, but luckily for Hill, there was no fracture, and they didn't find any further damage. So as far as return to play, it's all about letting that area heal. And while a dislocation of your collarbone near the tip of your shoulder, which is what we more commonly see, usually takes, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, you need to be a little extra careful at that SC joint because of what I was saying about what's behind that area. Luckily, Hill avoided surgery. So I would expect Hill to miss somewhere in the neighborhood 3 to 6 games, depending on the rate of healing. Yeah,
you can't tell. I'm a Tyreek Hill owner, right? Yeah.
No, great. I'm right there with you, and probably honestly closer if I were to bet to the 6 than the 3. The good news is that he missed the IR, so we know that he's not going to be hitting that designated to return, so that is good. But you know, we know the team is going to be extra cautious with this guy because they just gave him an extension, and he is so important to their team. So it's all about just monitoring that healing, and we'll hear news as the weeks start to go on.
All right, Nick. Mike Williams from the Chargers, he left during the second half with a knee injury. What is happening?
Yeah, so like you said, JJ, we saw him exit in the second half. According to Daniel Popper, who's a Chargers beat writer for The Athletic, Williams said he felt his knee tighten up, but that he and the team aren't really concerned at all and shouldn't miss any time. This is kind of a curious case because there's no video of a particular incident that caused anything. And having your knee, quote, tighten up could mean, like, all sorts of things. So, you know, without irresponsibly speculating, this is a case where we're going to have to monitor his practice schedule this week. When it comes to practice schedules in general, we always want to see an increase in activity as the week goes on. So
good tip.
Any downgrade in participation, especially, you know, toward the end of the week, let's say something pops up on a Thursday or Friday that wasn't there on Wednesday, that's definitely a red flag for me. So that is something that we'll have to keep our eyes on for Williams and really any of these guys going forward.
All right, in other news, Niner running backs are dropping like flies. Tevin Coleman was the latest with an ankle injury. What's going on with Tevin Coleman?
Yeah, so Kyle Shanahan confirmed that it is a high ankle sprain for Tevin Coleman. And high ankle sprains, I'm sure as you may have heard, take a little bit longer than standard low ankle sprains. You know, when you kind of more generally roll your ankle under you, those are much more common. This is something that is going to take a few weeks here to heal. And if not handled properly, it could take a little bit longer. High ankle sprains are definitely more difficult to deal with. I would say expect Tevin to miss, there's that voice crack, to miss at least until the end of December, or excuse me, end of September, not December, that would be bad. End of September, possibly even into October, which kind of opens the door for Matt Breida and Raheem Mostert to get a little work as well. So we'll, I'm sure, get updates in the next couple weeks with Tevin Coleman.
Thank you for clarifying. September and yes, December.
Very, very different things.
Very different. So you did say September.
September.
I'm interested in hearing about Joe Mixon. It was 10 yards on 6 carries. He's got a little bit of an ankle flare-up too. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So unlike Coleman, the Bengals believe Joe Mixon has a low ankle sprain, so much easier to deal with. And I forget who it was, but I saw a screenshot of the injury on Twitter where his ankle had that mechanism of getting rolled up underneath Bobby Wagner in a way that is very indicative of a low ankle sprain. So, you know, there's actually a chance, there's some reporting that he could play in week 2. He's another guy we'll have to monitor throughout the week. Right now, The goal of the athletic training staff and the medical staff there is to get down the inflammation. I saw a report there's still a little bit of swelling. You want to increase his mobility and strength as soon as possible, you know, without creating even more inflammation. And with all the resources that NFL athletic training staffs have, getting people back from these injuries is, you know, pretty quickly is certainly possible. I would say if I were to bet on it, he could miss this week. But he's another guy whose practice schedule, again, we'll have to monitor. But main takeaway, unlike Tevin Coleman, no long-term concern for Mixon beyond this week.
So then I think that brings us, as we've continued to go, let's talk about Darius Geis. Kind of what a young career here that's been marred by injury, you know, coming off that ACL. He injures his meniscus on the opposite knee. You and I were talking in the Slack channel about just how interesting kind of this injury is, of course, in a bad way. But educate the people like you educated me, please.
Yeah, of course. So I was actually in the stands for this one, right, as you can tell. I can't recall any certain play where he limped off of the field. And, you know, in preparing for this show, I was kind of like combing the internet to see if I could find any video. And I couldn't find anything. So, you know, since there is no particular one incident that caused this, you know, you hope that this isn't a compensatory injury that was kind of caused by the delayed recovery in his surgically repaired knee. Sometimes when that takes a little bit longer, your other leg starts to compensate. There's imbalances there, and that can happen. You know, it looks like for now, they're not going to treat it with any type of surgery, which is an interesting choice. They are going to treat it conservatively with rehab. So, you know, decisions like that, it kind of varies depending on the type of injury to the meniscus and the type of, if there is a tear, the type of tear. If treating it conservatively doesn't work, there are a couple things we could see here. Usually if there's just a little tear, they'll kind of shave a little bit off, clean it up. It's called a meniscectomy, which usually you can come back in a few weeks, or you could undergo a full repair where they try to reattach kind of the torn piece of the meniscus there in your knee. Back to the healthy portion and just let natural healing occur that way. And that takes much longer. So right now they are going to treat it conservatively. This is definitely something you can do with a meniscus. But we'll have to keep an eye out for Darius Geis. He's probably going to miss these next few weeks. And it is a real shame because he is so young, has so much talent. But yeah, and expect him to miss the next couple weeks here.
Gotcha. JJ, real quick to you, just kind of off what Nick was saying. Do you like Adrian Peterson now that Geis is going to be shelved for a little bit, maybe?
I think that AP is probably permanently ready to come in and get some yards. I think we could go to him about 10 years after he retires. And if need be, he could probably suit up and get us a couple. But I'm not a huge AP fan. But, I mean, if you're in a crunch, I would definitely pick him up.
Oh, good insight. And Nick, we certainly appreciate your insight there. There's just so many, I don't want to say big injuries. I felt like you get some years where you don't have any injuries, you know, week one, or you go a little bit, you know, wow, that's what we hope for, right? But the injury bug hit the NFL, I think, fairly hard. So thank you so much for coming on and, you know, telling the people and educating us as well.
For sure, Michael. Yeah, it is definitely one of those sports where you will get a high spike in injuries. Definitely a lot of action here. Hopefully that kind of simmers down as the weeks go on. But yes, I will be here every step of the way to help you guys out.
All right, Nick, thank you. And that was
Nicked Up
with athletic trainer Nick Mirabito.
Now let's get into the news. So let's swing on over to the news desk. So since our last pod, I guess you could say a lot has happened, right? Specifically in the Antonio Brown saga. Since we last checked in, he got fined by Oakland for missing team events. He got into a verbal confrontation with GM Mike Mayock. He issued an apology, asked for his release after making a video of a recorded phone call with John Gruden that was just weird. I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but he was actually released then. Then he lost his guaranteed money. He's now a member of the New England Patriots. Guys, that's one hell of a timeline. I'm not even really sure where to start, but let's just kind of hit the fantasy perspective. What are you expecting to see from Antonio Brown going forward?
You know, the hard thing is, with the news that just broke before we did the pod tonight, I don't know what we can think about AB. We haven't really had any specifics come out. I know that we talked about it before this pod started, that we didn't really want to approach who's telling the truth, who's not telling the truth.
Yeah, we'll let that play out.
But, I mean, once again, I'm a huge AB fan. You guys know I've been arguing with you all nonstop since the beginning. I think AB did a magnificent job of getting himself off the Raiders and to the best team in the league. I just don't know what's going to happen next.
Does that kind of look at looking at the situation when you're talking about like a team like the Patriots, where you know that and week one they looked like and they played the part of the best team in the league. Again, as we said, it's tough to diagnose because we can't just ignore the news that broke earlier today. But let's assume that again he's on the team and he's slated to start. Is he still a piece that you want going forward?
Give me. I want as many pieces of a high scoring offense as I can. Give me Sony Michel, give me Philip Dorsett, give me Edelman. I know that people are going to say to avoid the Patriots because you never know who is going to be the high scoring person. And, you know, that is a solid point, but don't overreact. The Chiefs have multiple mouths to feed, and I want as many Chiefs as possible. The Eagles have multiple mouths to feed, and I want Eagles on my team. That's the main thing I look for is a high scoring offense and try to get as many of those pieces as I can. You know, it is a crapshoot. You never know who's going to put up the points, but I want as many, you know, chips to put in on that offense as I can.
Yeah, it is a crapshoot, JJ, and that's why I want no part of New England's offense this year, unless it's in a best ball league, of course, because when I don't have to set my own lineup, it's a lot less of a headache trying to figure out which player is going to be featured this particular week. Day-to-day life is enough of a headache. The last thing I want is for my fantasy lineups to cause them for me also. I think that the passing game is going to be just fine. I mean, obviously it's going to be just fine. Tom Brady is pulling the trigger. You have all of these elite weapons. One player I think is going to actually get left out in the cold because of this is James White. I kind of see, like, you have Julian Edelman in the slot. You have AB who can play anywhere. He's going to, you know, take a lot of short passes too. I'm not really seeing where the workload for James White is going to be. And, you know, he's still worth rostering. He'll have his weeks where he is a viable fantasy option, but I think he's going to be the one that's the most negatively affected by this. As far as Sony Michel is concerned, he isn't involved in the passing game, so he is going to be the workhorse running back. However, I am concerned about his pitiful 15 carry, 14 yard performance against the Steelers. After a few weeks of getting back into it, I'm sure he'll get back to normal.
Yeah, those are two, very different ideas. Again, not here to judge anything, but like I kind of like JJ's your stance on that because whether they have Antonio Brown or not, we saw in week one that they're fully capable of moving the ball. And I personally think in some situations that I would just rather have players on a high scoring offense. And if you throw them in your lineup and you don't win, that's not an indictment of like you as a fantasy owner or anything. You put a good player into a slot that you thought was a good matchup, a part of a high scoring offense, and it didn't work out that week. You know, like I'm not going to cry about that kind of spilt milk. I'll just kind of keep pushing with a player that I know is hopefully going to get theirs at the very end. So that's going to do it for news for now. Let's move on. JJ, what are we looking at next?
All right. It is time for the segment that we call Red Light, Green Light. Like I said before, we'll go through a few situations from week one and tell you how we would proceed with them. So, the first situation, fans were expecting a big turnaround from the Cleveland Browns this year after an offseason filled with hype. I questioned whether a team of big personalities could coexist and prosper together. So, red light or green light for the Browns offense going forward? Ryan.
Green light means good, yes?
That you believe in their offense.
Correct.
Yes, I'm going green light then. You know, so the Browns, they catch an ass whoop in week one against the most disrespected team in the NFL. Like, the Tennessee Titans have had three winning seasons in a row, yet nobody talks about them other than to say they're going to finish last in their division. What better way to start off 2019 than to come out angry and throwing haymakers against the NFL's most hyped team? So I'm surprised by the margin the Browns got beat by, but I'm not surprised that they got outclassed in this game. You know, the Browns committed 18 penalties. 18 for 182 yards. You can't win that way. You know, after being humbled, they'll settle down, they'll find some discipline, and start to string together some nice victories. Baker's going to be just fine, Chubb's going to be fine, and OBJ is going to be just fine. Relax. It's going to be all right,
Cleveland. You know, if you're extra sneaky, I would totally start sending out offers to Brown owners that have Browns players and see if they're spooked at all. I love doing that, and in the past I've cashed in on week one. I've traded players that I just really might not want to have traded for because I liked, but when you're upgrading value, you're upgrading value, so maybe check that out. Ryan, I'm right there with you. I think the Browns got flustered, as you mentioned, the penalties. They kind of abandoned the running game and they became one-dimensional. Baker got flustered as well, got upset. When they settle into a game plan and they run their offense through Nick Chubb and then Baker, you know, supporting it in the ways that he does, I think the good things will just really follow them. I know they're going to rebound. I will give you the green light for that. Green light for the Browns offense. And I still think they were who they thought they were, or what we thought they were. Thank you, Dennis Green, coming into the season.
And we let him off the hook.
Seriously, man, I didn't see the Titans coming out that big, but good for them. All right, yeah, Ryan, maybe next situation, man.
All right, so John Ross had a career day against Seattle week one. He hauled in 7 catches for 158 yards and 2 touchdowns. Are you guys giving Ross the red light or the green light? Will this trend continue, and will he become the playmaker Cincinnati drafted him in the first round to become?
Well, you know, this is his third year, so this could be his breakout.
That's a good point.
As long as he is healthy, I'm buying. I was big this offseason on Andy Dalton, picking him up in 4 different dynasty leagues. With Zach Taylor coming in, we're going to see players' utilization optimized for performance. Taylor will put them in the position to be successful. I'm upgrading Ross to the Kiki Kuti level right now with some, you know, with injury concerns. But if he's a free agent, you got to get him on your team. I mean, we know he's fast. I think he missed a couple balls that would have even elevated his numbers even higher.
He did, yeah. Oh, JJ, you know that I'm kind of a cheater in these games, right?
Oh, Jesus.
So, I mean, I really want to give a yellow light, but I won't, okay? I'm going to say green light. I'm going to agree with you here, but I do think that you need to make a judgment situationally. Again, for me, as I don't want to continue to harp on this, but if I just lost Tyreek Hill, right? So, if maybe you're a player like that and you want to add some bench depth, maybe it's a green light. You know, if you're stacked at receiver, you're probably going to pass. Ultimately, I look at targets. You're not going to get those targets by accident, which was 12. And with Joe Mixon maybe hobbled, I think you can expect this to continue. So I'm going to give it a green light there.
Now, just real quick, how do you guys feel about John Ross after AJ Green returns to the field?
I feel even better about him.
Really?
Okay. I think he provides a deep threat that AJ Green no longer represents. I think he'll actually open up more by commanding more coverage. You're not going to be able to double him going deep.
I might be a little scared because that would make him the third option on Cincinnati. Like, I mean, I think Andy Dalton is a decent quarterback, but is the volume there to support that? Because we all have seen AJ Green when he plays, he demands a little bit of attention. So I'm okay with John Ross as a holdover. Maybe spend 10 to 15% of your fab if you're, it might be almost a little bit too much, but again, if you need him, that's probably what he'll go for. All right, situation three. Let's take a look at the Eagles' backfield, right? Miles Sanders had 12 touches. Darren Sproles, 12 touches. Jordan Howard, 8 touches. Miles Sanders outsnapped both other running backs. He had 36 with Sproles 22 and Howard 17. So red light or green light, this statement. While the backfield might appear to be a committee, it will be Sanders going forward.
Yeah, green light, green light, green light. It is great to see Miles getting the bulk of the snaps. Obviously, the Eagles trust him in different situations, which only helps his value. Nick, the great big Eagles fan, we're talking about Darren Sproles, and although we both love him, we're not a big fan of seeing him get all these touches this early in the season, trying to keep him healthy. But I have to admit, Michael, you converted me to a Sanders believer. And yeah. I am willing to go the extra miles to get him.
Got him. Yes. Dude.
Thank you.
Dude, you are like, I thought I was good at dad jokes. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, you're so much better than me.
I
bow to you.
I'm teaching right now, so they're coming flying in every day.
All right. Ryan, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking, like, from a dynasty perspective, obviously this is a green light. Sanders is the future in Philly, but this backfield is a little bit of a headache right now. You have three running backs in the mix, and it's going to take a few more weeks, I think, for everything to shake out. So, yeah, if you want to get Sanders on your team, if you need a running back, now's the time to strike. But if you do go ahead and trade for him, just expect him not to be a major contributor for your team for at least a few more weeks.
I mean, it's interesting listening to the both of you just over the past 20, 25 minutes here. JJ, you seem to take a lot of risks. Ryan, you seem to play a little bit safer. Do you feel like kind of what I just described fits both of your personalities when you play fantasy?
Yes.
Yes.
And and how do you feel like that translates? JJ, I'll ask you first.
I don't like risk. I mean, I like seeing people getting targets. I like seeing snap counts. So it might seem like I'm taking risks on players, but if I'm reaching on a player, it's not, I don't see it as a risk. It's because I've done the research, I've looked at the numbers, and I'm satisfied with what I see as a solid option in front of me.
Yeah. And for me, I value consistency more than anything else. If you're a player that can get me a consistent, 15 PPR points, I'm going to like you more than somebody that, has a ceiling of 30, but a floor of 5. So that's kind of my strategy when I build teams.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I thought that was fun. A little red light, green light there. Now we're going to get into our last segment, which is my favorite. Of course, before we sign off, we're going to get some actionable fantasy advice to you that you can use right now too. Each one of us will give one start and one sit at each position. JJ, you weren't here last week. I'm glad that you get to join in this. This is way too much fun. We're not going to try to really pick the obvious, but again, this is going to be about confidence and really let you know what kind of conviction we have. So we're going to try not to name, like tell you to start Saquon Barkley, right? He is going to be in your lineup every week unless he's a bye week. So we were looking at what, Ryan? We were 12 for 15 last week. Not too bad. We're kind of counting this here if we will get a win if we say start a quarterback and they score like over 20 points. If a skills position goes over 14, and it's a loss if we recommend a player and he's under 8 for, like I said, the skills, 14 for quarterbacks. Really, if they're not making, we're telling you to start and they're not doing well, we're going to be honest about this. And again, it's the same for our sits.
Yeah, as Michael said, it was a good week one for us. Our best call was probably Michael telling you to start Lamar Jackson. The guy went off for 5 touchdowns and showed off some much improved arm talent. Worst call was my advice to sit Dak Prescott. Though hopefully you listened to my advice to start Jameson Crowder, Delanie Walker, and Mark Ingram. But that's what we do here at Rider Dynasty. Take the good with the bad, ride or die. The important thing to remember is that we were 12 for 15 or 80% win ratio week one.
All right. And JJ, like I said, because you were out defending the country and teaching America's youths, you get the nod to kick us off for our quarterbacks. So who is your quarterback start of the week?
Michael, what's a ute?
teaching the Utes, I believe they reside in Utah.
Oh, nice. So my start of the week, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, is Josh Allen versus the New York Giants.
Oh, nice.
I think Josh Allen's horrible. He's Josh Allen stank up the stadium in the first half.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Hey, I'll go all in.
Okay.
He stank up the stadium in the first half against the Jets. Once C.J. Mosley got injured, he lit them up. The Giants don't have a C.J. Mosley, so expect Josh Allen to use his legs and his arm to rack up points. They're going to come early and often. Like I said in our very first podcast.
Ooh, all the way back, huh?
Expect some bombs to Smokey Brown from Josh Allen. I yelled about that in our podcast number 1, and I'm still yelling about it now.
Please don't go back and listen to podcast 1.
No, don't listen to it.
The quality.
But I did say that.
The quality has increased significantly since we've got here as far as sound alone. But anyways, you did say that. So Josh Allen. All right. Ryan, what you got?
Yeah, and after week one, that bold Smokey Brown call you made, it's looking pretty good. But after suggesting to sit him last week, I am starting Dak Prescott everywhere I have him this week against the Washington Redskins. No, this is not an overcorrection because of last week. Washington allowed Carson Wentz to throw 313 yards and 3 touchdowns on them, and I see no reason Dak can't match that, especially with this crazy new offense under Kellen Moore and all these weapons that they have. I mean, Dallas is looking scary, like a Super Bowl contending caliber scary team. And so, yeah, I'm not going to get cute this week and make a stupid call based on some obscure stat I uncovered. Start Dak Prescott if you have him.
Okay, Michael? So you're setting yourself up to hate Dak Prescott for the rest of the year. If this goes south, you're just gonna be like, ah, Dak Prescott. All right, I believe. So, my quarterback start of the week is gonna be Jared Goff. Since we're just loving the word stinker here, because we don't want to say something worse. You know, he was 23 for 39, 1 score, 1 interception in week 1. I think that he's due for a rebound against the Saints in week 2. Now, you watched Deshaun Watson just put on a show, which also, by the way, that was the best week 1 game, obviously, Houston against the Saints. I think that while Goff might have had some struggles away from home last season and then in Carolina, again, he gets the Saints back home in what I think is probably going to be a shootout in New Orleans. So Jared Goff is going to be my QB start for week two. Let's get into our QB sits.
All right. I picked a quarterback I hate for my start of the week, and I'm picking a quarterback I love for my sit. Sam Darnold against Cleveland. This is the last chance for the Jets to get a victory before they have the toughest four-game stretch of any team this season in the NFL. They face the Patriots twice, the Eagles, and the Cowboys in the next 4 weeks after Cleveland. The Cleveland line is going to provide enough pressure to keep Darnold uncomfortable. And as of now, Gase does not seem to be able to fix the protection. I believe in Sam long term, but in the short term, it's going to be tough. Do not start Sam Darnold this week.
And
proud of also, you, JJ.
I know that was hard for you.
Very.
And while you're not starting Sam Darnold, you should also not start Jimmy Garoppolo against Cincinnati. His 49ers won on Sunday, but it wasn't because of anything he did. Against Tampa, which is one of last year's worst defenses, Garoppolo only managed 166 passing yards for one touchdown and a pick for a grand total of 9.4 fantasy points. This week he faces a surprisingly stingy Bengals defense that held Russell Wilson, who is actually a good quarterback, to under 200 yards passing. Stay away from Jimmy G.
And I'm going to go with, for my quarterback sit, Mitchell Trubisky. Sure, he could rebound. Absolutely. There's so many other options to pick from after watching him against the Packers, which the Packers looked like the 85 Bears. Then now he's got to go to Denver at Denver, which is a pretty tough place to play. So I'm staying away from that. Just sit Mitch just this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Going to Denver is never good. They're in the wrong time zone and everything.
What a hater. I'm just saying, I get to watch football games at 11, 2, and 6:15.
Yeah, whatever. All right, so running back starts. I am saying you must start Nick Chubb versus the Jets this week. I don't know if you're sensing a theme in my picks so far. They all kind of revolve around the Jets or the Jets' opponents. But Devin Singletary gashed the Jets for 70 yards on 4 carries. Chubb is a much more explosive back than Devin Singletary, and he is going to get a lot more touches. Look for Chubb easily to finish as a top 10 running back in week 2.
And I'm going to start Josh Jacobs versus Kansas City this week. Jacobs is my pick for offensive rookie of the year. He had a strong performance against that solid Denver defense in the very first game of his career, racking up 113 yards from scrimmage and 2 rushing touchdowns. Leonard Fournette ran the ball effectively against KC week 1, and he would have done a lot more damage too if the Jags hadn't had to take to the air just to keep up in that game. So even if the Chiefs start to run away with this one, Jacobs is a great receiver out of the backfield, so he'll still have a role in this offense either way. So I'm rolling with Josh Jacobs happily in week 2.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going to go with, for my running back start, Austin, don't you dare call me Melvin Gordon's backup, Eckler. David Johnson gashed the Detroit defense by land and by air, and Eckler was also everywhere in his matchup against the Colts. He had 3 touchdowns. I think when Eckler gets a chance to play Detroit here, he's going to do the same thing DJ did to the Lions, and this dude is nasty just because the Chargers offense is still so good. And I'd be pretty upset if I was Melvin Gordon to be watching this because, in my opinion, his value is just tanking. Anyways, Austin Eckler, keep firing up. He's your running back start for me.
All right, for running back sits, I'm starting with Aaron Jones versus Minnesota. The Vikings clamped down in week 1 on the Falcons offense, building a 28-0 lead to a supposed best offense contender in the NFL before allowing 12 garbage points 12 points in garbage time. Do not expect Aaron Jones to rebound from his week one performance against a stout Bears defense. I am not telling you to get rid of Aaron Jones. Just don't start him against his NFC North opponents.
I think that's pretty sound advice, JJ. And also this week's do not start Philip Lindsay versus Chicago Bears. You know, the Bears offense might be dog, you know, but their defense is looking gnarly, and they thoroughly shut down Green Bay's entire offense last week, especially the run game, as JJ already covered with Aaron Jones. You know, the coaches in Denver appear to be sticking to their 50-50 backfield plan, which saw Lindsay take 11 handoffs versus Royce Freeman's 10, and Lindsay only managed 10.6 PPR points against Oakland, whose defense isn't even half of Chicago's.
I trolled a lot of coworkers today with the Broncos because it's, you know, it's a religion here in Denver, and they were not too happy. I gotta know your friends here. They were, again, none too happy. So maybe I have to stop that. I'm gonna go with Peyton Barber. I'm not a fan of the Bucks, though. Again, you might want to reach out to some skilled players and see if you can grab them, at least maybe a Godwin or an Evans. They're probably going to be down early against the Panthers. Game script will put the ball back in Jameis's hands. there's really not much good to say. You know, Ronald Jones actually looked decent, and the running back that I don't know how to pronounce his name, but you should, you know, it was an organization that kept kids off drugs in the 90s. Only, you know, he's a pass catching back. I hope you get that reference too. That would make me so much happier. I just don't see, you know, him coming out and improving against a better team this week.
Speaking of things from the 80s, my wide receiver start is Julian Edelman. because I believe he's like 52 years old.
You kill me, I'm telling you.
Versus Miami. The Patriots may hang half a hundred on the hapless hacks from Miami, but Edelman will be the most consistent of Patriots wide receivers this year. And I expect him to easily have more than 7 receptions and go for 80 or more yards against the Dolphins.
I think that's a pretty safe call. I'm going to start DJ Moore against Tampa Bay. I'm predicting a bit of a bounce back week for Cam Newton against a divisional rival. The Rams last week, they have a great defense. Cam struggled. That's a tough matchup to kick off the year with. But he still managed to find Moore 7 times for 76 yards. And against a softer Tampa defense, I expect an uptick for DJ Moore on Thursday night, calling for over 100 yards and a touchdown.
You know, technically, in my keeper league, he would only get 7 points for that week.
Ugh. Dude, you got to stop bringing that up. Like, I feel worse for you each time.
Like, sorry, like, guys. I apologize.
I want to send you, like, an edible arrangement or something like that.
Ooh,
you
know? I would love that.
You know, something nice, yeah. You know?
Yeah, that would be nice. Same sort, maybe know? like a pajamagram.
A Vermont teddy bear. not sponsors, by the way, but
we are available for any of these sponsorships.
We would take it very happily. I'm for my wide receiver start, I'm not going to react too much to last week, but I think you should know, you probably do, that Sammy Watkins has to be in your starting lineup in all formats right now. There's no Tyreek Hill. Nick gave us the lowdown on Tyreek Hill's injury. Patrick Mahomes dumped 576 yards and 6 touchdowns in both meetings against the Raiders in 2018. He's off to a great start now. Sammy is a wide receiver 1 in week 2 and beyond, I think. If you drafted well, then maybe he's your third wide receiver, or maybe he's a flex play at the very worst, but get him in your lineup. Sammy Watkins.
Have I mentioned how much I love Sammy Watkins?
You have, as a matter of fact. And, like, that's a big victory lap, man. It really is.
You know what? I wasn't even happy that he scored that many points because I love him. I just love him, and he did well. And I know in his heart he was happy, and I was happy for that. Sorry.
No, that's what love is, right there.
It is.
Put that in a Hallmark card. I'm buying.
It is already, but I will try to publish it. So my wide receiver sit for this week is somebody who broke out and everybody was excited about last week. Terry McLaurin versus Dallas. I loved having Terry on a lot of my best ball rosters. I was able to get him late in rookie drafts, and he is an excellent deep threat. But the bulk of his yards seemed to come before the Eagles realized that they had a 1 p.m. start to their game.
11 o'clock.
damn mountain time. But, I mean, the Eagles sort of, it seemed to me, didn't realize they were playing until after halftime. So Dallas is going to be aware of him after what he did in week one, and they're going to be ready to cover him. Which is probably a good idea on deep throws for the entire game. So I would sit Terry McLaurin.
And similar to Terry McLaurin's situation in Washington, I'm sitting DJ Chark this week against Houston. I felt like this one might be a bit of a cop-out, but I felt it needed to be said. Chark hauled in four passes for 146 yards and a touchdown week one. That's not happening against the Texans this Sunday. So for the two people who started Chark last week, congrats. That's a great call, but lightning's not striking twice here.
Ryan, I'm going to give you some homework, okay? And I think that you need to figure out a nickname for DJ Chark. I think he needs one really bad.
I'll see what I can come up with.
And I can't come up with anything other than the Baby Shark theme song that I've heard from everybody else, which is...
Sharknado?
Oh, that could be good.
Sharknado. That's interesting.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that movie?
I can't say I have.
Have you ever seen like any all five of those movies?
No, I haven't seen a single one, but no. I know it is a movie.
It's not a good movie. I've watched the first one. Not good, but it's part of the culture now, right? Let's look at a lion for my wide receiver sit. I'm going to go with Marvin Jones here. So Detroit's playing the Chargers, right? Yep. And yes. I am sitting Jones. LA gave up 8 receptions to T.Y. Hilton, who is the Colts' number one, obviously, but locked down any other wide receiver or tight end. So no other receiver had more than 3 catches for 35 yards. So that means I feel like you can pencil, you know, a good production from Galladay, maybe Hockenson, but I think Jones does get held in check by the Chargers.
All right. For tight end starts, I am going a little bit off the beaten path. I am not going to pick anybody who had a good week one. I'm going with Jack Doyle, who is somebody else I've sort of am fixated on and I believe in, versus Tennessee. The Colts did not feature the tight ends against the Chargers at all. I believe they had 5 total targets between Ebron and Jack Doyle, but don't expect that trend to continue this week as they face Tennessee. The Titans allowed a touchdown to Njoku along with 4 receptions. Last week, Doyle played 68% of the snaps compared to 40% for Ebron, and he's going to be targeted at least 3 times as more than the 2 targets in week one. So if he gets 6 targets, he'll have 4 receptions for 60 yards, and I'll consider that a victory.
And I'm going to start Mark Andrews versus Arizona. I talked about him.
Of course you are.
I talked about him all offseason. He was my favorite fantasy player on the Ravens this year, and he came out week one in a big way. He was heavily involved in the Ravens passing game against Miami, but he has another favorable matchup this week. He hauled in every one of his team high 8 targets for 108 yards and a touchdown. And again, he's playing the Arizona Cardinals, who allowed a rookie tight end, TJ Hockenson, to make 6 receptions for 131 and a touchdown last week. So roll with Andrews with confidence.
And then I'm going to go with Hard Knocks Love, but I did call him as a sleeper about three podcasts ago, and that's Darren Waller. Watching him on Monday night, he was involved early and often in the Raiders passing attack. I like the number of targets, his ability to move the chains there. You know, obviously Carr's not going to go crazy with the yardage every game, but he did look to him often, and it really is going to be all passing attack against the Chiefs. So I'm going to say he's not touchdown dependent because of all the volume. So I would feel comfortable lighting him up in any of my lineups, especially PPR.
All right. So let's go to tight end sits. Now, guys, I'm not going to be picking on you too much, but I find it funny that for tight end starts, you each picked a top 10 tight end from last week.
True.
And for sits, you picked two guys who were horrible last week. Let's go out on a limb next week. All right, guys?
We'll do better.
Let's stretch.
But
let's stretch.
I like these players, but I'm with you. I got it.
All right. All right. So Jimmy Graham is a definite sit for me versus Minnesota. I like Jimmy Graham. Now, all the analysts will say that Rodgers threw a jump ball to Jimmy Graham for his TD in week one, and he put it up there for Jimmy Graham to go get it. But if any other QB makes that throw, they would be trashed by the media.
Mm-hmm.
That was a horrible pass. Same thing as the pass before that to MVS, which was terrible. Anyway, I don't see Minnesota giving up that pass with their strength down the middle of their defense. So Jimmy Graham is not going to get a jump ball this week, and Green Bay better get their offense back on track.
And I'm sitting Eric Ebron versus the Titans. After the drubbing the Titans put on the Browns last week, I think people are going to have a less difficult time remembering them. Anyway, their defense looks pretty scary, and while they allowed a touchdown to David Njoku, as JJ mentioned, his 13.7 fantasy points would have fallen short of a win for us here. Ebron this week, or last week rather, saw three targets, and he only caught one of those for 8 yards. The usage is questionable, the matchup is bad, and I'm staying away from Ebron.
Call it safe, call it weak, call it what you will, but I'm calling to sit Kyle Rudolph because I think Thielen and Diggs need to eat in a divisional matchup.
Mm-hmm.
I am also saying this because Cousins threw the ball only 10 times, which it doesn't worry me about the offense because Dalvin Cook is a talent to be featured, but I think any offensive coordinator can really customize and adapt in game. But if you are going to have a game plan that does feature the run, and you're only going to throw to two wide receivers that you need to get the ball, I don't even see a point having Kyle Rudolph on the team. So just in case you drafted him, if you waited late and you're thinking, okay, maybe a decent offense, keep finding another option. Kyle Rudolph is a sit for me.
Michael and Ryan, I want to apologize because I pushed Kyle Rudolph. I know it's only week one. I know they only passed two times, it felt like. Once to Adam Thielen for a touchdown, and I think Kirk Cousins just threw the other ball in the air and Dalvin Cook caught it and ran it in. But wow. When I checked the box score and he had no targets, yikes.
Yeah, a little scary there.
So sorry to all our riders. I apologize.
Again, adapt and keep moving forward, and hopefully you can continue to stay with us. That is going to do it for us tonight. Again, hit us up at Rider Dynasty on Twitter. And again, RiderDynasty.com. Have a good night, folks.
Catch you on the next one.
Boat drinks.
I missed that last time, JJ.
Aw, I missed you guys.
Have a good night.
Thank you for listening to the Rider Dynasty podcast. If you have enjoyed the pod, please subscribe and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Follow the guys on Twitter at Ride or Dynasty. You can follow JJ at JJ Wenner. Ryan is at BixPixFFB. And Michael is at Michael S. Kloss. Check out our website, rideordynasty.com. And remember, we have your back.
Your reputation far exceeds your skills, Mammy.